I find that I'm unpleasantly breathing.
All right, so if you watched my American roundup yesterday, if you haven't, go and catch it up. But if you have, as I promised, today we're going to be looking at the British year in review for 2025. And in the same way, I've got month by month going through each of the months to see what happened. Before we get there, I have a brand new book out, Foundations of Shakespeare. And wow, what a production this is from Academic Imprint. They've done a fantastic job. Color maps, and it's a gorgeous edition. If you pick up the course Foundations of Shakespeare from the academic agency and show your receipt to the publisher, you can get this for half price. And it's a good time to pick up the course because it's the January sales. That means only one thing: promo code SHORJAN gets you 25% off all courses today. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about 2025 in British politics.
Sure.
SHORJAN.
Can you command a comma like Joseph Conrad?
Sure.
SHORJAN.
Are you magnificent in your mastery of marginalism like Murray Rothbard?
Sure.
SHORJAN.
Are you legendary in your logical leveling of lamentable loquacity?
Sure.
SHORJAN.
Come on down to the January sale at the academic agency. Promo code SHORJAN for 25% off. All this January, I got more courses than the Queen had horses.
SHORJAN.
I got better rates than Andrew Tate's had mates.
SHORJAN.
I got better deals than Lizzo's had meals.
Sure, Jan.
All right, so what happened in 2025 in British politics? Well, we started the year off to a great start as the Treasury posted growth of 0.1%, which was below that which was forecast. 0.1% growth. That's what record immigration gets you, 0.1% growth. Also, little hidden story. I didn't see anybody cover this, but quietly, AstraZeneca abandoned its Merseyside vaccine facility. That also happened in January. Okay. Then in February, Reform hit 25% in the polls for the first time. And that was really one of the big stories of the year, which was Reform came to be seen as the government, not only as an insurgent party, but as a government in waiting. And from February onwards, all these projections put Reform at 350 plus seats, 400 seats. And, you know, people were starting to talk about when Farage becomes prime minister, not if, which is a huge change. I mean, this is the sort of change that only comes about every 100 years or so. The last time one of the main two parties was dislodged by an insurgent was when the Labour Party dislodged the Liberal Party back at the turn of the 20th century. We're talking about 120 years ago now. So this is a big change because it shows that the zero seats campaign, which, if you remember, I wanted to give Labour as many seats as possible so that they would have to own it totally. And then when they don't deliver, or if they don't deliver, we could then zero seats Labour. And both the Tories and the Labour Party would be completely destroyed. And you know, I'm not a big fan of Farage, I'm not a big fan of Reform. But structurally speaking, this is now happening. The Green Party are running up to the left of Labour. They've overtaken Labour in the polls. And, you know, we could create at least a big blow to the Uniparty, to the machinery. Now, as I've talked about in my appearance with Harrison Pitt on The Forge, I said, you know, and unless Rupert Lowe can do something to stop this happening, I see a Tory Reform merger in the future as a kind of mathematical certainty. You know, that's something that may happen down the line. Also, recently, Kemi Badenoch is back up in the polls somehow. Maybe a lot of the economic stuff with Rachel Reeves and so on has brought people back. You know, she had a good budget. You know, her performance in Parliament was quite good during that time. So, yeah, there's still a long way to go until 2029. But as things stand, and this was really cemented in February this year, the reform are the assumed to be the government in waiting. Okay. Are they going to be serious? I don't think so. Are they going to do what's necessary? I don't think so. But make no mistake, they could. They've got a once in a life. Farage, if he actually gets that majority that is projected, has a once in a lifetime opportunity to make real lasting change in this country. You know, and if you missed that interview with Harrison Pitt I did on the Forge, I laid some of it out there of what could happen. Okay. Speaking of Harrison Pitt, he also did a year in review with that guy who likes Churchill. What's his name? Rafe. He was actually pretty good on there. I actually don't mind him. And some woman on New Culture Forum. That was worth checking out. I thought it was not a terrible review. So I'll give Harrison props. He's a buddy of mine. Okay. Also in February, we started to see demonstrations around hotels that were housing asylum seekers. That was a kind of first ballast in something that would become a major story as the year progressed. In March, there was a report done on faults around the reporting, around when information was released in the Southport murders. So that was interesting. Also in March, figures were released that around 30 people were being arrested every day under Starmer for social media posts. Something that has become a touchstone of Labour, who are, dare I say it, dangerously anti-democratic or undemocratic. They delayed the local elections, and Labour are rumoured to be looking to push the general election too. Whether they'll actually do that, I don't know. But Starmer has got this authoritarian streak where he's just like kind of cancelling elections and doing really questionable things like that around the margins. In April, we got the Online Safety Act that came into effect. You know, a bit of a local story, but there were huge piles of rubbish in Birmingham after the strikes there. And, you know, people forget this now, but those bins piling up in Birmingham at the time, I thought were an emblem of where it felt like the country was. Right, it felt like the country was in the shit, basically. It felt like nothing worked. Like we were in the, you know, this is like a nadir in British life. And those images of the bins in Birmingham were emblematic of it. The Online Safety Act came into effect. What that meant was a lot of websites had to be age restricted. I think there was like a 90%. Officially reduction in porn traffic after the Online Safety Act came in. I have I noticed anything myself? Not really. I haven't noticed. I mean, it's caused a bit of a pain on Substack where it keeps on badgering you to verify your age on Substack when you're just trying to read an article. That's been a bit annoying. It came in. Okay. Then in May, we got historically Keir Starmer's Islands of Strangers speech, where he was widely compared to Enoch Powell, and cut one of the strongest anti-immigration speeches I've heard from a major politician ever, where he called Boris Wave a libertarian experiment, where he said that the economic case for immigration doesn't stack up anymore. And it was really still an amazing speech, right? An amazing speech. Unfortunately, and this would set another template for Starmer, who was a little bit like the Okie Cokie, you know, in, out, shake it all about. He's always U-turning. He never follows through. he makes a statement, he makes a stand, and then 2 weeks later he's walking it back. Because after backlash from the left and from backbench MPs, Starmer walked back his Islands of Strangers speech by June. And June saw a whole flurry of U-turns. U-turn on winter fuel allowances, caving into pressure from his backbenchers. He U-turned on grooming gangs, and whether they would do a report or not. He U-turned on welfare cuts. And it showed that Starmer now was beholden to a left-wing faction of his party, caught constantly between Blair and Tony and the Blairites, right, and the kind of right of the Labour Party, who want to take an axe to the welfare state, who want to cut spending, who want to, you know, implement things like digital ID and AI and so on, and the left of his party, who are left-wing lunatics, essentially. And in these sorts of moments, he didn't have the courage, the strength of his conviction, as Blair did, to face down his radicals. If you read Blair's books, both in My Journey and his book on leadership, the number one rule in politics, face down your radicals. Say no to your radicals. Starmer continually makes a move to doing that and then backs down to them when he's put under pressure. Very weak Prime Minister. And it's one of the reasons why Keir Starmer is now the least popular Prime Minister ever. And I mean ever, like ever since they've started records, there has never been a Prime Minister less popular than Keir Starmer. I mean, it's remarkable. I think his net popularity rating hovers around 9 or 10%. It is remarkable. I mean, it's incredible that somebody is this disliked. Why is he disliked? He is despised by the right, mainly due to his comments over the Southport riots last year. And also on the fact that he keeps on doing this in-out thing. He says, you know, 1 minute he's sounding like Enoch Powell, the next minute he's walking it all back and calling everybody racist again. You have to pick a lane, right? So the right believe that Keir Starmer is an ideologue, a communist, a far-left radical. The left believe that Keir Starmer is a Blairite, a fascist, a right-winger, and so on and so forth. So he has managed to unite the entirety of the country, left and right, against him. It is a study in how not to do politics. And what makes it all the more remarkable is that he's got somebody in his ear, Blair, who actually knows how to play this game, who could have helped him thread the needle if he'd actually had the courage to follow through. But he doesn't do it. He does it for a couple of weeks and then he goes off on a different tangent. So a lot of it is of his own making. A lot of it is that Keir Starmer is an inept politician, truly an inept politician. One of the least effective political figures I have ever witnessed. In July, we saw the Epping protests, anti-immigration protests around the country, some of which started to turn violent. But that started to become the dominant political conversation in the country. It was now around immigration, and increasingly as the year has gone on, towards remigration, or, you know, changing, like halting the demographic change in the country. And so this was interesting, the Epping stuff. What happened, if you remember, is that it quickly kind of catapulted itself into Operation Raise the Colours. That started, I think, around August sort of time. This was the big flag waving operation, you know, raise the flags, the England flag or the Union Jack over all the bridges and on all the lampposts and so on. That got a lot of people excited. I was less excited. I thought, well, flags can be co-opted. Nothing's going to come of this. This is a waste of time. I said it at the time. I still don't believe. Unlike the farmers' protest that I covered the other day, these it's too easily co-opted, too easily kind of collapsed into a clown show. And that's basically what happened. They didn't go anywhere. Every political party started waving their own flags. You know, there were all these, you know, rainbow coalition gatherings around the country. Oh, you know, here's my mate Footlong with the flag and all this sort of stuff. And by September, of course, you had the massive Tommy rally, which is where all that energy built up to 150,000, 100,000 people, 200,000, some people claim more, piling into London for this massive rally. And then, you know, in October, Tommy buggered off to Israel with his mate Liam Tufts, and the energy didn't go anywhere. Okay, so what was interesting to me is that last year, the dominant thing that happened over the summer were riots, was violence. This year, it started with something that looked like it was going violent in Epping and so on, and it then became the flag thing, which then became the Tommy thing, which then became a referendum on Tommy. So all of the actual energy didn't go anywhere. And I still maintain that whole thing, right, whether you supported it or not, didn't go anywhere. And I maintain that, and I'll maintain it. As the author of Populist Illusion, flag waving, protests, taking to the streets and so on, was all for the birds, right? Unless it resulted in actual political organization, which it may have done, right, which then can produce tangible change, it was all a waste of time. And as if to compound it, what happened in that period, while all of these people were putting up their flags, is that the government actually implemented digital ID, something that Tony Blair has wanted for 20 years. They actually just announced it out of the blue after saying they wouldn't do it. They announced it. 4 million people signed a petition against digital ID. The government said, we're going to do it anyway. So hard luck, suckers. And then in November, it came into force. And now the digital ID is coming in. Okay. And nobody was organized politically against that. They just brought it in, topped in the most perfect demonstration of elite theory I've ever seen. Digital ID was just brought in top down by order of Lord Tony. Speaking of Lord Tony, Peter Mandelson, his longtime kind of aide and confidant, was sacked in September over the Epstein scandal. He was in the Epstein files and he was fired. Also, Angela Rayner was forced to resign over something to do with her mortgage, if you remember. That happened. So September was quite an action-packed month for the government. There was the Tommy rally, Mandelson sacked, Rayner sacked. Lots of people were talking about the government collapsing in that month. Didn't happen. Starmer's still there. Stubborn as a rock, really. If there's one thing you can admire Starmer for, it's for his lack of human emotion or responding to anything as a normal person would. And he's just still there. Okay. Also happened in September was that the Father Ted writer Graham Linehan was arrested at an airport, which was used then as a symbol for the decline of free speech in this country. A lot of people got on board with that because Graham Linehan is an ardent Zionist, and so that was a national story. Interestingly, the following month, Dr. Aladawan, a Palestinian kind of nationalist and protester, was also arrested for free speech. In fact, he'd been arrested 3 times. Her house has been raided. And those free speech voices who support Graham Linehan, on that one, are like, oh, no, she deserves it. She's brown. Deserves it. Fuck her free speech. So, yeah, there's a kind of weird double standard there, because a lot of those free speech organisations are wrapped up with Israel, unfortunately. So as much as they talk about two-tier justice, they themselves have a two-tier justice when it comes to Graham Linehan on the one hand and this Palestinian doctor on the other hand, okay? Me, I just tell it like it is. I call it straight. I shoot straight down the barrel of the arrow. Shoot my arrow straight. It's an old Persian saying about, you know, how you're a truth teller just cannot deviate. Maybe it's my own failing. An honest man in a dishonest world. Then in October, so that arrest happened in October, the Linehan one happened in September. Mahmoud did tighten immigration rules. I remember at the time when she became the Home Secretary, a lot of people were focusing on the fact that she is a Muslim. I said Mahmoud will actually be tougher as a Home Secretary than, I forget Yvette Cooper. She'll be tougher than Yvette Cooper, and she has been. She tightened up the immigration rules in many different ways, raised the cap and various other measures to make it harder, made visas virtually impossible to get for certain people, made becoming a British citizen much harder. So that happened. I don't think the Labour government will get any credit for all of this, but if you think about it, they're setting up the state, like putting in a lot of things that the Reform government will benefit from down the line, okay, because these things take a little bit of time. But anyway, that happened. Also in October, there was the synagogue attack, which felt like a big story for about 2 days, and then it disappeared again. Strange. There was also the one in Bondi Beach in Australia just this past month. I find it interesting that kind of terrorist attacks of this nature are back, and that they have a habit of moving the political conversation in a direction that benefits certain people. But still, it was a tragic attack. Then in November, we got the release of the immigration data. The big story was that there was a 70% drop in net migration. A lot of people on the right tried to play down this number and say, well, look, if you look at the gross migration number, I noticed Rafe and Harrison Pitt did this, you know, still quite a lot. And, you know, then if you have a track emigration and so on, fact is, it is a pretty big drop. But also, Boris Wave was kind of a mirage. A lot of Boris Wave were students. A lot of those visas were coming up to the end, or they weren't renewed, or, you know, the students graduated and gone home and so on. So that big number of Boris Way was always going to come down in a way. You could say this is regression to the mean, if you know anything about statistics. So, you know, what was striking to me is that Labour completely failed to turn this massive drop into any sort of political win for themselves. Like literally no, like they got nothing for that at all. And again, you know, if it was Tony Blair and David Blunkett and so on, that's the only story you would have seen. They would have hit you over the head with it so hard, you wouldn't have been able to move without seeing, oh, 70% drop, right? What are you going to do now? Racists, we've solved the problem for you type thing. Starmer completely failed to set the narrative. The narrative was set by everybody else. The narrative was set by the right-wing press. The narrative was set by Farage. The narrative was set by all of my friends. Okay, it was not set by Labour. So they failed utterly to take advantage of that. Should have been good news for the government. They weren't able to make it a political win. That's the only win that sort of counts. Also in that same month, Rachel Reeves was caught lying over the budget. Massive controversy. I covered it on Office Hours. She didn't resign. Right? In a previous age, in a more civilized age, if you were caught lying to the country, okay, lying to the country over budget numbers, that was a resignation offence. And a sheer sense of honour and shame, okay, would have led to the Chancellor resigning. Rachel Reeves, lacking honour, lacking any sort of shame or guilt or anything, didn't resign. Instead, she came out crying and blaming the country about sexism. What an absolute bloody disgrace. Great, that's about the third time Rachel Reeves should have resigned and didn't resign and then blamed everybody else for something that was a failing of her personal corruption. I mean, again, I was beside myself with anger about that story. There's so many other stories, little stories that I was angry about over the course of the year. That one, though, Rachel Reeves is just a despicable individual, really. But she got away with it. And Starmer also, weak, didn't sack her. So, what else happened? Tommy and Liam go to Israel. Yeah, I kind of covered that. In November, Piers Morgan interviewed Tucker Carlson. Tucker came and did this like tour and talked to Piers Morgan. That was a kind of big story. As we got our little taste, like, I mean, in the American roundup, a lot of the stories were about the podcast wars, about these big media personalities and podcast hosts having these feuds, these kind of pro wrestling feuds. We didn't really get much of that, but then Tucker brought it. You know, it was almost like when, you know, SummerSlam came to Wembley. It was like Tucker's bringing the circus to town. So we got our little taste of American pro wrestling nonsense when Tucker came here. And I would say that, you know, it gave us some pretty good memes, like the, you know, Piers Morgan sniffing the curry and stuff like that. But it also got us the next interview that happened in December, which is when Piers Morgan interviewed Nick Fuentes, okay, which produced one of the funniest things I think I've ever seen, or certainly seen in British news, which is that during the Piers Morgan Fuentes interview, he brought out this guy called Danny Finkelstein, and Nick, you know, kind of he brought him out. He had just said, "Oh well, the trouble is with the Holocaust is that people are just milking it for political capital. They're using it." And Morgan said, "Well, I don't know anybody who would do that." And then in the next breath, brought out this guy Finkelstein, who's written this book. And Nick, in his inimitable style, came out and said, "Oh well, I don't really care. Me mum died in the Holly." Okay, as a kind of dismissal of this. You know, he's just denying the use of this card that's been played continually for 80 years at this point. Well, that in itself was kind of funny and so on. What was truly hilarious is that Danny Finkelstein then went on a tour of British national news shows like Newsnight and BBC and ITV and so on. He just went on lots of different TV shows. And on national TV said, "Me mum died in the Holly." Here's a clip of him saying it.
"Me mum died in the Holly. Me mum died in the Holly."
I just can't believe. I cannot believe he went on air and he said that.
"Me mum died in the Holly."
For me, one of the funniest things I can ever remember is like him doing that and not seeing how it would play. Like, this is basically a boomer unaware of irreverent Zoomer online culture and lost, basically. He's kind of getting his ass handed to him, but he doesn't even realize it. Doesn't even realize what's happening. Doesn't even realize that him going on air saying that was just delivering a massive win to the Groypers, quote unquote. Okay.
"Me mum died in the Holly."
Then, to compound matters even further, he started a massive feud on Twitter with Connor Tomlinson. Basically the last person you'd expect to start feuding with Danny Finkelstein. But there it was. And if you read that exchange between Finkelstein and Tomlinson, it's been pretty interesting and revealing. All right, you can make up your own minds about where you stand on it, but it's been an eye-opener. It really has been. So yeah, if the Piers Morgan Fuentes interview gave us nothing else, it gave us this amazing new heel, Danny Finkelstein, and this catchphrase, "Me mum died in the Holly," is incredible.
"Me mum died in the Holly."
Then, on top of that, Greta Thunberg has just been arrested for holding up a Palestine Action sign, which is a criminal offence, since they've been designated a terrorist organisation. And, I don't really know where that story goes, because the left are just... They continually are getting themselves arrested over it, and the government is continually just arresting them. So I don't know where that story... Like, they've been doing it for months now, and I think they're trying to say, like, "We can't arrest us all." And then the police are like, "Yeah, we can. Well, we're going to keep on arresting you." Don't know where that goes. I don't know where it goes. What I do know is that, as I said before, the free speech activists don't care about that. They care about Graham Linehan's free speech, but they don't care about the free speech of Greta or the good doctor that I mentioned earlier, which is two-tier, if you ask me. And finally, the last story of the year, which is the one I did the video on a couple of days ago, the only bit of good news this year was that the farmers defeated, Jeremy Clarkson and the farmers defeated Keir Starmer. So at least if you're a farmer this year, that is one bit of good news. That was the year in review 2025. As I mentioned, pick up Foundations of Shakespeare. Promo code SHOREJAN gets you 25% off the academic agency course, the Foundations of Shakespeare, Trivium, Mega Bundle. Pick them all up now, and I'll catch you next time.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.